Introduce.
We're going to do 5-4-3.
5-4-3.
It's harassment. So our next speaker is Christian Kahler, if I pronounce it correctly, which will talk about identities for full LEPAC loop configurations and a semi-standard Tableau.
And let me turn this on. I also want to thank the organizers for setting up this great meeting where I guess all of us could learn a lot from each other. And this includes the organizer who unfortunately is absent here. So of course I cannot say something like Gilbert was able to say, that he knew Pierre Leroux for 40 years. But in my case, it's almost 20 years. And since then, we have met at many occasions at conferences. And it has been already said, and maybe this is the shortest way to say it, and he was a person constantly emanating positive energy in all senses, meaning being very excited about mathematics, being excited about canoeing, being excited about nature, skiing, and also positive energy in the sense that he would transport this positive energy to his colleagues. And just to illustrate this, I want to tell my first encounter with him, which I still remember. That was, I believe, at the Lattice Path Conference in Hamilton in 1989. And so we went to lunch, and one of the first sentences he said was, he said to me, and so this is the famous Kartenthaler. So I said to myself, what does he mean? I'm not famous. I was actually, because of my previous life as a pianist, I was not very much present on the scene. But so he explained that not knowing I had solved the problem that he had posed. But so I took it as his way of encouraging young people. And so this really stuck. So therefore, I still remember that sentence. So for my talk, the subject I have chosen is fully packed loop configurations, that is, objects which have not shown up so far at this conference. And so these are objects that have become fashionable in the recent past. This is because of a series of conjectures. And the first of these is by Razumov and Stroganov. And so you will hear much more about this at the next workshop in 2 weeks. Well, in 1 week from now. And in my talk, my perspective will be a little bit different. So I will not talk about this Razumov-Stroganov conjecture. What I will do in my talk is, first of all, I will introduce these objects and also explain equivalent objects so that you can connect to other things. Then I will present a set of conjectures on these fully packed loop configurations. Then I will talk about some proofs of some of these conjectures. And in the last part, so that will leave open at least one of these conjectures. And in the last part, I will present recent work of Johann Tapper that was published last year, which I think, which is again more conjectures, which would imply one of the previous ones. And I think this is very intriguing, but probably not so much known, and therefore it should be better known.
For you, loop will mean cycle?
We'll see. Okay. So what are these fully packed loop configurations. So here's the definition. We have some graph, and a fully packed loop configuration is a collection of edges in the graph so that each vertex is on exactly two edges. And I hope that my examples will work. Moving too quickly, I guess. Okay, so in my talk, it will always be the grid graph and actually a square. And here you have the vertices of the grid graph. And so now here we have such a configuration of edges such that every vertex is on exactly two edges. And actually, I didn't say any, so this is just a finite piece of a bigger graph, so I should say something about the boundaries. And the boundaries will be this type of pending edges on the boundary. Namely, it's every other edge in the sense that I explain. So you take this edge, so you don't take this one, take this, don't take, take, don't take, take. And so now you have to turn around, don't take, take, don't take, and so on. A question?
If we're oriented, it looks like a lot of the decomposition of permutation in the cycles, but if you're not oriented.
This is not oriented, right? So what you can see is that because of this condition, every vertex is on exactly two edges. There will be some loops that form, which gives the name to the model. And then other things will start and end on the boundary. But of course, physicists also call these loops. And it's fully packed because every vertex is on a loop.
But anyhow, if you number the occupied edges on the boundary 1, 2, 3, 4, you join even to odd, so they are a bit kind if they were oriented.
Yeah, actually,
except that for the loops.
This pattern of connecting will play a big role in all, everything I will tell.
This is a torus. The guy on the top is the same.
No, it's not. It's a square. There's no identification.
These guys on the top, these guys that go out to the boundary, are considered to be in loops.
They're half edges.
This is just terminology.
So another way of saying it is
the paths are also called loops, just to not make it too complicated.
So another way of saying it is every vertex lies on exactly two edges, except for some designated vertices that lie on exactly one edge.
This could be another way of phrasing it, or I do these pending edges. So here's the first fact, which is if you fix an n by n square and you ask of how many configurations are there, there's a nice formula. So these are round numbers. Somebody asked what are round numbers. What is a nice formula? So generally, we mean a product quotient of factorials. This is a nice formula. And it says also that this is the same as the number of n times n alternating sign matrices, which is an object from combinatorics that has been studied a lot. I quickly explain how this conversion goes from the fully packed loop configurations to the alternating sign matrices. So what is an alternating sign matrix? the entries are 1, minus 1, and 0. Along each row and column, the ones and the minus ones alternate. That is, you forget about the zeros and just read 1, minus 1, 1, minus 1, and so on. And row and column sums are 1.
That means the first and last have to be ones.
Exactly, yeah.
You want the coin?
I don't know.
The coin goes left too.
What?
Okay. Thank you. So this is the rule. You just look at, so I think I had another transparency, which did I place it? Yeah. So you look at every other vertex. And so that is, yes, it says something about even vertices and odd vertices. By even and odd mean that you look, you decide, for example, maybe this is even, then this is odd, even, alternating. So a checkerboard fashion. And then you apply this rule. Whenever you see the edges going straight through a vertex, then according to this rule, it generates a 1 or a minus 1. Whenever this is not the case, then you put a 0. And so these are two different types of transparencies, therefore. One sticks, the other doesn't. So for this configuration, if you do the translation, then if I did it right, then you obtain this matrix of zeros, ones, minus ones. Let me see, for example, here you have a straight line going through a vertex, and this generates this one on top of the matrix. And you can see, so you have to believe me, if you do this translation, then at the long rows, along columns, you have 1 minus 1, 1 minus 1, and so on.
Can you show me the formula just once more?
Yep. Can I? So I guess that the things in red are the odd vertices and the others are the even vertices.
So you are saying that in the first row you cannot have all zeros?
No.
Like with the lines going down, all of them?
No, because of these boundary conditions, this is not possible, right?
There's only one.
And there's exactly one that will appear. Is that okay? So this will not be important later in the talk, but just to tell you that there are also other objects which are equivalent to that. And there's another set of objects with which you may be more familiar, which is, okay, I think this is a transparency. configurations in the six vertex model on the square.
Really?
No, that's okay. We will manage. So the so we have again the square.
Use 2 pound coins.
Yes.
So what is a six? What is a configuration in the six vertex model? In this case, again, it's on the square grid. And so for each vertex, the rule is that there should be two ingoing arrows and two outgoing arrows. You can see there is this one ingoing, and these two outgoing. And then again, there's a certain boundary condition called the domain wall boundary condition, which means that up, all arrows are pointing up on the lower boundary, all arrows are pointing down, and left and right, the arrows are pointing inside the square. This is the boundary condition. And if you try to fill these boundary conditions inside, the configurations that you get are in bijection with, again, these fully packed loop configurations. And there is this, which is because of the following translation. So now we will get into trouble. So I will hold it now. I hold it now. Okay. So again, you do a, you look at every other vertex, and then it says at every other vertex you mark the incoming edges. So that is here, for example, you would mark this edge and this edge and so on. And if you do this, so this would not correspond to this configuration, but it corresponds to this configuration. So that these are the incoming edges, and these are incoming edges, and you see how the translation goes from the six vertex model to the fully packed loop configurations.
You can overlap the slides, or they are not same.
Pardon me?
It's overlappable.
That's true. If we still can look through, and if things don't glide away. Okay. Okay, so now I introduced my objects, and I will be interested in considering fully packed loop configurations with a fixed matching pattern. So what do I mean by this? So can I take the background noise away? So you see, there's this fixed boundary condition, and when you have a particular fully packed loop configuration, then it defines a pairing of these pending edges. For example, this one, if you follow the corresponding loop, is paired to this edge. This edge here is paired to this edge. This is paired to this, this is paired to this, this is paired to this, and this is paired to this. So every fully packed loop configuration defines a certain matching pattern on the pending edges. And I will be interested in finding the number of fully packed loop configurations on the n times n square grid with a given matching pattern. Why is this interesting, or where does this come from? Well, it comes exactly from this Razumov-Stroganov conjecture and subsequent conjectures, which predict that the ground state of a certain Hamiltonian in the dense O1 loop model, that the components of this ground state are given by number of fully packed loop configurations with a fixed matching pattern. So this conjecture that I will not explain, but of which you will hear a lot in the next workshop, is still open, but there is important progress by several people, in particular Di Francesco, Saint-Justin, De Heer, Piatov, Pasqui. Okay. So to talk about this, one should know one actually surprising fact, which is a certain rotational invariance. So this is a theorem of Ben Wieland, which says the following. You consider fully packed loop configurations with a certain matching pattern. So maybe this one, which I indicate symbolically by tying together the pending edges that should be matched by the fully packed loop configuration. And then it says the number of ways to complete this, so that you get exactly this matching pattern, is the same as the number of fully packed loop configurations with a rotated matching pattern. So you see what I did here. I moved the pending edges by one step in clockwise direction, but I kept the connections. So, I moved the pending edges in counterclockwise direction, but I kept the connections, as you can see. And so here are two ways to complete that picture. So this is.
They're not strictly alternating. Is it a typo? Because on the northwestern corner, they are consecutive and they are connected.
No. You have to keep in mind always that.
Oh, that's right. It's fine.
Yeah, that there. So here's a way to complete this one. You see that it corresponds exactly to this matching pattern. And so this is rather surprising because the square doesn't have this symmetry of rotation. But the proof is so elegant that I can show you how the proof goes. Of course, not the little details that you have to check, but this is the proof. So it's a bijection between these two types of configurations. And it goes like this. So you look at, there's the every other. So you look at every other square. And what you do normally is that you, wherever you see an edge, you delete it. And if there's no edge, then you put it, for example, here. You look at this square, you delete these three edges, and there was no edge, you put this edge. Except if you see two parallel edges, and then you just keep them. And this is actually what I have done here. I look at every other square. So I look at this square, and I do this complementation, as you can see. So every other. I look at this one. Here you see two parallel edges. They are still two parallel edges. Every other square means also to look at sort of imaginary squares, namely at this one here, outside squares. So also here I have to do the complementation, which means that I have to introduce this edge here, and this moves from here to here, and so on. So every other square in checkerboard fashion, you do this, and you will discover that it goes to a fully packed loop configuration, which has the rotated matching pattern. So once I have done this, I can introduce a symbolic notation, because now if I ask what is the number of matching patterns, what is the number of fully packed loop configuration with respect to a particular matching pattern, it does not matter anymore whether I put it like this or in a slightly rotated fashion. And therefore, I use this symbolic picture. So everything is now rotational invariant. So this will mean that I start at some pending edge, and this should be connected to the next pending edge. Then this one should be connected to the pending edge, which is by 4 apart, and so on.
Sorry, but I missed the rule how it applies at the boundary. At the boundary, you do not have.
Yeah, at the boundary, you have only three edges that you can consider.
Ah, like if it were half a square.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you do the complementation, so you can never have parallel edges because of this special boundary conditions. You do the complementation on these boundary squares. And so here is a set of conjectures that I promised to show. So it's the first of these conjectures by Jim Propp and David Wilson, second who is here. And it says the following: if you want to count the number of fully packed loop configurations, such the matching pattern is designed so that you connect always subsequent pending edges. So you take one pending edge, it should be connected to the next one, then again, this is connected to the next one, and so on. And you have an n by n square, then the conjecture says this is the same as, well, the number of all configurations, but not on the n by n square, but on the n minus 1 by n minus 1 square. This is rather surprising because when at first sight you may think, okay, I just go to the problem and I look carefully, and then I will be able to set up a bijection between these objects and the fully packed loop configurations on the square, which is by one smaller, but that doesn't seem to work easily.
There's a lot of numerical evidence that this is true. Is that
well, this is well, sure. There's no doubt about this.
No, and also it's one of the conditions of the Hasselbalch spiral project. If you prove this, then this is one part of the Hasselbalch spiral project.
Yeah. So here's another one. And so the next conjectures are by Jean-Bernard Sibert in a paper from a few years ago. And there he looked at matching patterns, which consist of bunches of arcs, and he has three bunches of such arcs, and then he observed that this was given by a nice product formula. These funny symbols here means hyperfactorials.
This is theorem.
You pronounce it.
Not anymore. Yeah.
It's just n minus 1 factorial.
What? No. It's hyperfactorials. It's a product of the first few factorials.
Oh, okay.
It's big, quick.
Therefore, we need another symbol and another way to say it. It has still to be determined. So here's another conjecture, which is a slight variation of this one. So again, you have three nested bunches of arcs, and here are two little ones. And well, there's another variation. So there's more and more of these are not nice numbers anymore because there is some bigger polynomial factor. And then
so here the only difference is that you have those two guys in one of the.
Yep.
And there. Another thing special.
It's just slight variations. So Sibert looked a little bit more into this business with having nested arcs. And so another conjecture says that you have a bunch of nested arcs, and then here, otherwise, you have some matching pattern, which I denote by y here. And then this conjecture says that this is py of n divided by, okay, I will have to say what this means, factorial. And this thing here is a polynomial in n, the number of arcs, with integer coefficients, with leading coefficients. Again, I have to explain what this means. Okay, so here are the explanations.
There is a question.
Yeah.
Those factorials, they remind me of the like Hookland like formula. Is that related to your second?
Once again, if we.
These products of formula of factorials remind me of like the Hookland.
Yes.
Is that?
We'll see the connection. Okay. So what we need to understand what is written there, we need to understand how to go from matchings, and actually I always say matchings. The matchings that make sense here are non-crossing matchings. If you have two pairings which cross in this visual language, then there cannot be any fully packed loop configuration which corresponds to that. So they must really be non-crossing. And this corresponds in a trivial fashion to, say, Dick paths, for example. We will have more objects of that kind later. By just tracing the matching from left to right, and whenever there's an arc emanating, you go up. If you have an arc that is closing, you go down. Now we are here. We go up. Another opening arc, a closing arc. Opening, closing, closing. So it's very trivial bijection to Dick path. And then you can also make other objects out of this. So if you embed this in, is there a question? Into the.
There is a question.
Yeah?
Here is why just any completion of the arc configuration.
Because why can be any completion, yeah.
And P is monic, its amount?
P is monic, no, it says what the coefficient is. It's, but I didn't explain.
The leading
coefficient.
Not the leading power.
The degree that is also a part of the conjecture, but I didn't put it. So if you embed this into the highest Dick path, then there is a certain complement, which.
Well, we see that.
Well, I guess so. So there's a certain complement, and if you separate this complement, it's a Ferres diagram that is contained in a triangle. And what you see there, this is related to this Ferres diagram. So what this.
Sorry, what is Ferres? This is like Young tableau?
Yeah, no, a Young tableau is a filling of a Ferres diagram, a Young diagram. Young diagram. So this is the number of boxes in the corresponding diagram. So you know now what this factorial is and what is this. Then you have to know you don't have to know. Representation theory of the symmetric group, but it refers to the representation theory of the symmetric group. So to each diagram, Young diagram, there corresponds an irreducible representation, and this irreducible representation has a dimension, and this is what is meant here. As I say, you don't have to know anything about representation theory. You just could take the formula so that this thing here is, again, size of the diagram factorial divided by the hook length. And so here I explain what the hook length is. You take a cell, and the hook is the cells to the right, the cells below in the same column, and the number of the cells in the hook, this is the hook length. And here you take the product of all hooks in the diagram. So this is now the complete explanation of this conjecture. And here is one more that goes one step further. Now you have again a bunch of parallel arcs, and you put two different ones, and there is a similar type of conjecture. Okay, so that was the series of conjectures.
What if you put a single tableau and two arcs and here and then here?
Once again, you put a
single tableau, say, in the bottom and two bunches of parallel arcs. It would be a polynomial in N and M.
So So you mean I put this one here? Oh, and now two bunches of arches.
Two rainbows, yeah.
I would expect, but...
the formula were all with two rainbows and something, isn't it? So
yeah, I would expect, but I don't, I can't say for sure. It was not looked at. I didn't look at it, and Shaw and Asipia did not look at, but I guess so. Yeah, it should also not be too easy, too difficult, if it's true. Okay. So what is the status on these conjectures? The first one, which I have shown, and actually which I planned to come back, but I think I buried it. So this conjecture about going by one dimension lower, this is still open, and I will say a little bit about it. Then, as was already remarked, this conjecture about the three bunches of arcs soon became a theorem by Di Francesco Saint-Justin and Subert. And the last four conjectures I showed, they are also theorems, joined with Fabrizio Caselli, Bodo Lass, and Philippe Nadeau. And I want to show you a few ideas how this goes. So I will demonstrate the main idea by looking at this conjecture. So I have put here a matching configuration that is such a matching configuration. So you see this means these parallel bunches of arcs. Here's another parallel bunch. And this one here has this special situation in the interior. So the important observation is, if you have parallel arches, and this is an observation due to the shear, then there are a lot of forced pieces. So for example, this point here, you cannot connect it to this point, because then the matching configuration is violated. This one should be paired to something on the other side. So you can't connect here. You must connect like this. But again, you can't connect here because this would violate the matching configuration. You have to connect like this. And then for the same reason, you can't connect here. So you have to connect here. You can't connect this. You must connect this. Then you can't connect here, but you must connect here, and so on and so on. So there are many forced edges.
Do you need to choose a special rotation for the proof or any?
Yeah, that's true. I chose a special position, namely that this comes to the. I can't explain exactly. It is a special position. I make use of this Ben-Wieland rotation theorem. That's true. I choose it so that it is at a certain distance on the right.
Because at the first look, it doesn't look specially nice.
Okay, we'll see. So here are the forced edges for this one. And yeah, okay. So you see it's a lot of forced edges, and there are even regions where it's completely, I mean, this is already done. Every vertex is on two edges. You have some freedom in this region here. You have some freedom in this region here. OK, so let's.
OK, now it looks more nice.
OK. So what comes now is a translation to rhombus tilings, lozenge tilings, as we have seen in Mihai Csuku's talk. And the idea is, okay, so I look at a tiny piece of this region here, which is not yet fixed. I connect midpoints of edges. And you see, when I do this, then I get a triangular grid. Same thing as he had in the environment of lozenge tilings. And then if I have a particular way of completing the fully packed loop configuration, in this case by the red edges, then this corresponds in an obvious way to rhombus tilings. So when you connect this, then you make the corresponding triangles into a lozenge. And if you do this everywhere in the particular fully packed loop configuration, then you see that these fully packed loop configurations, the ways to fill this picture, correspond to rhombus tiling of the region which is not fixed. So which is this region which is not fixed? So here I put it. So there you see this triangulation. It's a little bit distorted, so let's straighten it out, which I do here. So then it looks like this. So sort of a hexagon with two ears.
You made a choice at the top about a finite number of them, something like that.
I made a choice?
Yeah, there are two marked edges over there.
That's, okay, let me see.
This is determined.
Yeah, I think this is also determined. Yeah, it's determined.
That one is determined. You are not summing over these plus the complementary.
I have to remind myself, I think I do this. Yeah, there is a choice. Namely, this one has to be matched either to this or to this. So there's a summation of two terms. That's correct.
Which will be two triangles.
Yeah. It's a region of the same kind.
Okay.
But if you see this, so that also happened in Mihai Csuku's talk, there are forced lozenges here. So for example, this has to be taken, then this has to be taken, this forces others. So if you take all the forced lozenges away, then on the left side, then this remains. And here again, you make a choice. If this is in, then the other is not in. And so there's again a subtraction, which I will not explain in much detail here. Then, okay, did I? Then you see that you will get a region which has some indents here. And so here comes the connection to what was mentioned before, these hook content formulas. So if you have a region which looks like this, so it's basically sort of a hexagon, but it has dents here, then the number of ways to fill this, this is known because there's a translation to semi-standard tableau, which works briefly in the following way. Consider a particular rhombus tiling. Then you can draw paths from the bottom to the top edges. And how this goes is you go from an edge, the midpoint of an edge on the bottom, and you just follow the rhombi. And then somewhere you hit on top. You do the same thing here, somewhere you hit on top, and so on. This gives you a set of paths. And did I do this? All right, okay, so we'll see how I have to rotate the picture. So, somehow like this, we have to rotate the picture like this, and then I make these paths orthogonal. So you see this one became this one at the bottom, this one became this one, and so on. And then I put numbers on the horizontal edges. How do I do it? So I do it along diagonal directions. So whenever you see a horizontal edge along this first diagonal layer, I put a 1. On the next diagonal layer, I put 2s. If I see a horizontal edge, here I put 3s. I put 4s, 5s, 6s, and
so
on.
They're just counting along the paths.
They are just counting along the paths. That's another way to express it, right? Whenever you have a horizontal step, you put the number of the step within the path. And then you read the numbers, so along each path, and you make a column out of it. So this one corresponds to reading this path, this one corresponds to reading this path, and so on. And you get an array of numbers, which has the property that numbers are strictly increasing along columns. This is obvious from the construction. But also numbers are weakly increasing along rows. And this is because these paths cannot touch each other. That comes from the original construction. And such things are called semi-standard tableau. And the number of semi-standard tableau of a given shape is a nice number. So I will not explain what it is. So here it is. So you see the endpoints determine the shape of this area of numbers. And if you have a given shape, then you have this nice formula. You plug the formula in, and you will get all the results.
You mean that there is a bound on the numbers? Otherwise, they are infinite, of course.
Pardon me?
There is a bound on the number that you can put inside.
Yes. Yeah, this is, this, you see the bound, you can see the bound. This is just the distance from the starting point.
I see that, but you said the number of filling with weaker increasing and increasing
rows
with numbers in general, which is a different counting problem.
Yeah, that would be, no, that would be infinite, I mean, no, if there's no bound.
Shape.
But there's a bound, fixed shape. The shape must be fixed. So this thing here, this Young diagram that you want to fill, this is fixed. And it's fixed because of the fixed ending points. The endpoints determine the shape.
It says on the left, with entries less or equal than A.
And the size of the entries, and the size of the entries is also bounded. The size of the entries is also bounded. And then it's a well-defined finite number. Okay, so if you put everything in, then you get the formula. And so this explained this one conjecture. I say just very briefly a few, almost nothing, about this conjecture here.
I'm sorry, how Zipper could have had this conjecture without having this calculation?
Oh, because he generates the first few on the computer, and then you discover patterns, and yeah, right, that's the way it goes. I mean, I could say more things about this, how this goes. It's not so difficult to, in particular, you see there's many nice factors, these factorials you see as at a certain point. And for this particular one, there was then an ugly factor as well, but this is a polynomial, and all of us know how to guess polynomials once you have enough special evaluations, namely by interpolation or whatever.
You introduced the hook length formula in relation to the symmetric group, but the n is it related to GLN?
Yeah, of course, the same standard tableau, they are related to GLN, but I don't think, at least at this stage, there's no, regardless whether it's the symmetric group or GLN, there's no relation to representation theory so far.
These polynomials, PY.
It just appears because you discover that you can match your problem to rhombus tilings, and then the rhombus tilings has this translation that I explained to semi-standard tableau, and there you are.
I was thinking of the representation of GLN given by a certain Young diagram has a dimension which is all kind of this shape.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's not the same.
Yeah, it's important then to see, for the leading coefficient that this appears, this dimension of Y. This comes because part of the Hooke content formula is the Hooke formula. If you erase the numerator in the Hooke content formula, it's the Hooke formula, and this is the reason that this appears.
But the polynomials in N have nothing to do with what you have here and the ones which give the dimension of the...
Well, you can write a certain expansion, but there's not too much relation here.
A big part of the polynomial comes from all this splitting of choices. One time you choose a Lozengeal, one here, so there will be a sum of a lot of terms. So
yes, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Cannot make not a mess.
It is a sum of terms. That's correct. Yeah. Okay, so for this particular conjecture, you do the same thing: that you place your pattern in a certain way, you determine the fixed edges, and then you see. So I don't know why I have two pictures of the basically which say the same thing. Then you see that you have these two regions which can be again translated to rhombus tilings, triangular grid, and then there is this triangle where you don't know much. But this observation by itself, so if you translate this into rhombus tilings, then you will discover that, again, the number of ways to fill this, given, I must explain this. So along this border between these two subregions, you have a choice to make, namely which vertical edges you pick. And if you make a certain legal choice, then it turns out that this number, again, by the translation that I have shown you, is the number of some semi-standard tableau. This as well. And these numbers I will denote by this A.
Is it true that you are having two split regions because now you have a single rainbow? If you were having two rainbows, you would have divided.
I will have a bigger sort of decomposition, yeah.
So maybe it just works also in that case, more complicated.
Yeah, I think so, but I can't tell for sure. So what this says is that the number of fully packed loop configurations is the sum over C1, C2. I denote by C1 the choice of vertical edges here. C2 is the choice of vertical edges here. You have to sum over all these choices, and the number of fully packed loop configurations is this sum. And it turns out that, as I said, this is a number of semi-standard tableau, this is a number of semi-standard tableau. And if you put this together, then you get this other conjecture of Suber.
What is the middle number, A of?
Yeah, exactly. This is the topic for the last part of my talk. So right, it turns out to be somehow important to get a handle on this rectangular region. So I think you were asking the question, okay, when you have two bunches, how does it look like? Again, so there will be this triangular region here, and This is the work by Johann Tapper. He said to himself, we should understand what happens in this triangular region. And so I don't have much time. I have to see how I will organize this. So what happens for this mysterious triangle? So what Johann Tapper looked at is, you fix a certain matching pattern on the bottom. You fix a certain choice of vertical edges along this border. You fix a certain choice of vertical edges along this border. How many ways are there to complete the triangle? And to really explain what he found, I have to introduce more ways of encoding these choices of vertical edges. So this is a little bit small, but I hope you get the idea. So you should look here. I number the vertical edges 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and so on. And then here I have taken a particular choice, 2, the second, third, fifth, seventh, I have chosen. And I could map this in a trivial way to an up-down path by saying whenever I don't take the edge, then I go up. When I take an edge, then I go down. Does this correspond? It doesn't. So now. Oh, so now I'm a little really confused. Up, down, up. Okay, there's something. Okay, I think it has to go this way. You have to go up in the beginning. Then I don't take this edge. Then I go down for not taking. I take the next two, up, up. I don't take this one, down, up, down, up, down, and
get to go down at the very end.
And I get go down at the very end. So in principle, if I take any choice here, this will not map to a Dick path, but it turns out that if you make your choice in a way so that you don't get a Dick path, then there is no way to fill this, regardless what you do. So it must be a Dick path. And then we have seen if we have a Dick path, we can take the complement, it corresponds to a Ferrer's diagram, which I will denote by lambda of something. And there's also a trivial way to represent this as well-matched parentheses, namely, whenever I go up, I open the parentheses, whenever I go down, I close one. So this is multiple ways of seeing the same thing. Okay, so let's introduce a notation. If we fix a choice of vertical edges here, choice of vertical edges here, matching pattern here, I denote by A of alpha, P, beta. This is the number of ways to fill this with a fully packed loop configuration.
Pi is the matching pattern on the bottom.
Pardon me?
Pi is the matching pattern.
On the bottom, yeah. Okay, so then.
That they are
supra-significantly
matching.
Pardon me?
I bet that there will be an extra symmetry that we were not expecting in alpha, pi, and beta.
There is no symmetry, no.
Okay.
But there is something surprising, that's correct. Namely, so here are some matrices. Namely, we will form these two matrices out of the one. The A prime I didn't explain. And I think I will not explain. Okay, so in this first one, you fix the first component and the matrix indices are sitting in the other two. In the second one, the matrix indices are sitting there. And then there are two more matrices. One is the B matrix. It says that you put a 1 So it's again, it's always indexed by matching patterns, which we can also see as Ferris diagrams, whatever we want. So in this case, I want to see them as Ferris diagrams. It's one. If one is contained in the other and the difference is a vertical strip, that means you have to rotate the diagram as I did, and you are not allowed to have, the difference cannot have two cells in the same row. This is a vertical strip. And then you also form this matrix C, which has this special A matrix. By this I mean this, and by this I mean a sequence of several columns. And the surprising fact is that these matrices satisfy these equations containing the matrix B and this, again, mysterious matrix C. And since I don't have time, I will not be able to show you. But if you use this conjecture, then you can prove this conjecture by Propp and Wilson, and actually a generalization. So what does this mean? So this means the fully packed loop configurations, where you have opening loops, then something, closing loops, is the sum over all matching patterns, these mysterious coefficients C, fully packed loop configurations of one less, and well, you understand this, and in this formula, if you put n equals 1, pi this configuration, then it gives the conjecture by Propp and Wilson. So in summary, what this conjecture does, it gives you a certain refinement, a very strong property about these refined numbers. And from there, you can do a lot. You can do this conjecture, and there are more identities that Johann Tapper proves in that way. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. So I didn't know anything about the subject, but I see that the conjectures are falling like apples from the tree, so it's probably appropriate. So, Malek?
If one assumes the Razumov-Stroganov conjecture, all these are easy to derive?
I don't think so. No. Because you see, we are looking at a triangle now. This is not part of the Razumov-Stroganov conjecture. It's if you want, it looks at something else from which you can derive things for the whole square. The Razumov-Stroganov is about the whole square. And here we are looking at small triangles and a very refined counting, what happens within these small triangles.
So this would imply the Razumov-Stroganov?
No, I don't think so.
It's not verified for these cases where you can count.
Neither implied nor is implied by.
Yeah.
This counting implies some probability claims, right? So does it, this number, the sum?
Yeah.
So does it, for these events, is it proved or Razumov? So then you have the counterpart of Razumov-Stroganov.
I don't exactly understand.
So maybe after the... Okay. Sorry.
So I just have... So in the general question in the beginning, you asked this for any matching pattern. And I guess the number of these is this Catalan number.
Yep.
But you derive them after rotation.
Right, yeah.
And if there's some... I mean, if you want to somehow prove this... For all of them, you would need some nice way to enumerate the matching patterns up to.
Yeah, of course, this is the big question. You cannot expect a nice formula for each matching pattern, but Di Francesco and Saint-Justin have come very close. So, what they do is, and you will learn about this in the next workshop if you are there, they introduce many more parameters into the model, and then for this model with many more parameters, they are able to describe these generalized components by a certain integral. But it's a complicated integral, and it's not clear how to derive from there, say, Razumov-Stroganov. So far, they couldn't do it, but there's hope that they will be able to do it.
Yes, one question, and then
You described this approach which allowed you to prove these four conjectures. What goes wrong with it if you want to try to prove the Prop-Wilson conjecture?
The Prop-Wilson conjecture contains connecting pending edges that are next to each other. You don't have bunches of arcs. The bunches of arcs are responsible for being able to translate, are responsible for having many fixed edges, and then being able to translate what remains to a rhombus tiling problem. So if you just have subsequent connections, then you are basically in the whole square. You are in the same situation as we were in the triangle.
Maximally on frozen, in a sense.
Thank you again.